Whoa, it is Friday. That means Bring It In with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. We are mourning the loss of our neighborhood gator. He is no longer of this earth. So,
oh, man. You and Judy and these gators in Florida, like, yes, folks, we got the update over our group chat this week. The gator is no more. R.I.P. to, did he have a name? You even name him. What's his name?
No, poor sucker is all. He was dead. He was missing he was missing one of his upper jaw, maybe. So he was going to get killed when he got home, or the trapper got him. So I think trappers came and got him. So he's being served up probably as meat somewhere, is my guess.
Oh, man. He's not even going to that big gator heaven in the sky. He's just getting put.
Maybe his spirit is, but it won't be his flesh.
All right. You know, a lot's happening. We are on training camp eve. Ben Simmons is not going to camp. People aren't getting vaxxed. It's crazy out there, Coach. But before we get into that, we have some golf happening. Ryder Cup, by the way, a tournament which America loses regularly to Europe, but I know you want to talk about it.
Well, yeah, to be fair, we dominate going back to the original Ryder Cup. I think we're 26-14 with a couple of ties. But yes, I think of the last nine, we've lost seven. I say we because I was born in America, but that's what I was going to talk about. It's my favorite sporting event, Gerard. Nothing's even close. I think I was loving it long before Tiger came in. Once he came in, he does not have a great Ryder Cup record, but I just loved golf more when Tiger played, as did most of America. And I've just always really enjoyed it. It's different after Trumpism, knowing what our country is, how it's being split apart. This is the first time I've watched it with, of course, Trump being out of office. And it's just not the same, man. I don't have that same... I mean, I like the European players just fine. I don't pay that much attention these days anymore anyway. But yeah, I'm just, you know, the Olympics was the same thing. I just don't have the same spirit. I root for individuals more so than America. I guess probably shouldn't matter either way. But I will say it's the one event that I have never been to that I want to go. I don't care if it's here or there or in Europe. I'm going to do a Ryder Cup at some point. It's and the course is absolutely gorgeous in Wisconsin. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, Ryder Cup is one of those interesting events. I've watched it for a number of years. I, like many American or many golf fans, like when Tiger's not playing, I've kind of, you know, lost interest in it. Yeah. Just because he made it super exciting. But, you know, it's interesting about golf and the Olympics, you know, and these kind of, you know, these team competitions. Yes, it's, look, you're all your USA, whatever. These things to me tend to lead us towards that borderline nationalistic type of feeling. And then we start heading into nationalism. And I don't like where we go with that, right? Like, it's just, it's all bad. And that's all, you know, funny thing about sports, we always talk about it, right? And as a coach, it's different for you because you know the healing power of sports. But when you look at sports just in its rawness, right? It's us versus them. It's right. Automatically a conflict from the jump, right? And when you add, you know, countries of war and nationalism, it's just, yeah, so it always makes me a little not feeling great about that sort of thing. But anyway, nonetheless, on to more pleasant topics. Well, not really pleasant if you're a fan of the Timberwolves. we just learned that President of Basketball Operations Gerson Rosas was fired yesterday. An article came out in The Athletic and a Bleacher Report about his downfall. And this is literally on training camp eve. Like, training camp starts next week and they are like, we don't need a president of basketball operations. We're fine. All good. Yeah, that's a problem. Sachin Gupta has been promoted to take his place. Glenn Taylor basically just came out and said, you know, we're moving on from him. Now, there's salacious details that go along with this. He was having an extramarital affair with a married staffer who ran the communications and marketing team. They were seen kissing at a soccer game in Minnesota. All that is fine. If you want to go look that up, knock yourself out. That to me is not what the interesting part of this story is. What's interesting to me is what is happening in Minnesota as a whole. This is a franchise that, for lack of a better phrase, is a dumpster fire. And it's not run well. They are in the process. Alex Rodriguez and his partner have a minority stake right now. And in 2 years, they will assume full ownership of the group. Glenn Taylor's run this club for years. We know about the KG saga. We know about, and Coach, you can talk about this, the other many different missteps Glenn Taylor has made, lying to players, souring relationships with people, agents, other executives. What I thought was interesting in the report from Shams was talking about Rosas's reign. It was described as dysfunctional, with tension rippling through the front office, according to some sources. Outside of it, rival team executives and agents would complain about how Rosas treated relationships and negotiations. And obviously, you know, that coupled with the revelation of his extramarital affair, that was like, all right, we're going to get rid of this guy. Coach, you are a leader because you're a coach. I've been a coach. We know what that is. The NBA are basically 30 corporations, right? 30 companies. And you have to run them well, like a business. What is your mission statement? What is your vision statement? What are our values? How are we going to practice the right behaviors that drive us towards this mission? I bet if I walk into Minnesota right now and ask anybody, hey, what's the mission statement of the Minnesota Timberwolves? I don't know. They can tell me. What's your vision? What are the values we prioritize here? None of those things. And you cannot have an environment conducive to winning if those things aren't in place. Look, you've got a generational type player in Carl Anthony Towns, who we saw him tweet yesterday. What? When he heard the news? Look, this guy can be like, get me the hell out of here. This place is a disaster. How do you not realize that the way in which you create your organization and create that culture dictates what's going to happen for the Timberwolves players? I mean, we've seen it time and again, right? Knicks have been terrible for years. No one wanted to go there because Dolan's a nut job. I'm staying away. What is it about these owners? They don't understand the idea of culture setting and culture creating.
Well, I mean, they're individual people. And so I'm sure there's some differences in each of them. I will share with you one story with an owner that had reached out to me for guidance about a fight between a player and a coach. I can say that comfortably without saying details because there's plenty of teams where that exists at. And this owner was texting me for looking for recommendations. We can catch things, and I made some suggestions. And ultimately, I think this might have been the last text he sent me was, "I run a billion-dollar company." These are almost word for word what he wrote: "Billion-dollar company. I'm just going to tell him to figure it out." And I wrote back like, "You know, good luck with that." Like, nope. I went a little further and said, "Well, in your company, there are no employees that can just call a reporter and get their name on the front page." And the coach can do the same thing. You don't have that. You're a software billionaire. So that lack of insight is somewhat suggestive of part of the problem. Minnesota, to be fair, and I know you always want to be fair, everything you said was right. They had bad luck with Flip Saunders dying. I'm not telling you they would have worked it out. But they had a starting five not that long ago, maybe less than a decade ago, of Rubio at one, Kevin Martin two, Corey Brewer three, Kevin Love four, and Nikola Pekovic five. I believe as a starting unit, they were number two in the league in plus minus behind the Miami Heat group. I believe that's right. I may be wrong by a little bit, but I don't think so. And then their bench was the worst in the league. Rick Adaman was the coach. They had the worst bench in the league. And Flip or the owner wouldn't spend the money, wouldn't do the work to get some guys off the bench. Kevin Love asked for a trade, and it's been just a dumpster fire ever since. They've screwed up so many things. Go back to the David Kahn era, who I dealt with a few times when he was GM. I think one of the issues, Gerard, and this is something we've talked about before, and it's something I talk about all the time with friends of mine in the league, the owners don't know how to pick management right. They just don't understand this sport. They just don't. And it's evident by the mistakes they make in the hiring process all the time. And so when you hire the wrong executive staff, your ship is doomed to sink. It might sink quickly. It might sink in a couple of years. But it ain't going to stay afloat for long because it's not being run right from the very top. And so all those decisions as it trickles down end up being, you know, a very leaky boat to the point where it capsizes or just sinks. So it's too bad. I would tell you that surprisingly, Gerard, I've coached a lot of players that played for the Timberwolves. Every one of them really liked living there from a safety standpoint. They all lived downtown and could just walk underneath, you know, tunnels to get to the arena, or a 3-minute drive. Schools were in a good spot. They liked all of that. It's not their favorite place to live, favorite place to play, but that isn't the issue. The facilities are weird. Have you ever been to where they practice, which is basically, it's basically at the Target Center, like you can just be a regular dude on the street who is a member of the club next to where they play, and you can watch the team practice. Now, they use curtains to surround it, but in the off season they don't. Or at night after, you know, if guys want to come in and shoot later, I've gone in the gym and shot with players and had just dudes on, they weren't Peloton, they side bikes, just watching us work out. I thought that was weird. But it starts with bad management, Gerard. It just starts bad ownership, bad management, not recognizing that. I saw one quote, Gerard, you probably saw in one of the articles, where the quote was about Gerson. He isn't who he thought he was. And I know him. We've dealt with each other for years. I would have never predicted he would just be a jerk to people, but apparently he was. What are your thoughts on him blocking Sanchin from taking more or less a slightly elevated, if not lateral, move to Houston, because he claimed it's too close to the draft and you have all of our proprietary secrets? What were your thoughts about that?
That was extremely petty. And that, to me, strikes me as the kind of person that he is, right? Anybody who does that, that tells me a lot about your character as an individual and how you manage and lead. I love that Taylor in our chat just said they need to purify the franchise in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
With Apollonia, good.
Rest in peace to the legend prince. You know, look, that I'm with you, coach. That, like, how petty is that? But that tells me who you are as a person, leader, and manager. When you do something like that, people talking about mistrust and feelings of paranoia within the organization. Look, that is a direct sign of leadership, as you mentioned. Like, and it starts with Glenn Taylor at the top, trickles down. You, again, if there's no trust established among the management, ownership, basketball operations, GM, coach, all the different people on the op side, right? The scouts, everyone's got to be in lockstep and believe in, this is our mission, this is our vision, this is our value, these are our values. We build trust with our labor, which is our players and everybody else. You don't do that, the fans get a shitty product. And guess what? In Minnesota, that's what they've been getting. Shit.
I think a lot of fans would say, well, whatever, they're bad, but they're scoring other teams. The reality is the league suffers every time there's garbage in it. Where it's a better league when there's 30 teams well run. We've never seen that before.
Never.
There's still going to be bad teams because of bad luck as much as anything. But the league, it stays lopsided when you've got bad franchises. And to your point of McCarthy Towns, I even read a report yesterday that said he was going to demand a trade. I don't know if it's accurate. I didn't check to see. I didn't see anything today, so maybe it wasn't accurate. But it's coming. You know, if things don't change now, Mr. Gupta may do a great job and he may be happy. If they're not winning this year, at least making progress, it's going to happen. He's a marvelous Anthony Davis level talent who has never sniffed any important games, really.
Correct.
They made the playoffs a couple years ago and they only won one game. I think they lost in five. So it's too bad. And I don't, you know, they've got Anthony Edwards, super talented, but like, I'm not ready to say that he's going to be a difference maker yet. He's got a long way to go to learn how to win games. He knows how to make highlight reels. I think Sachin's going to do he's going to do a good job. I know Chris Finch, their head coach. Jury's out as to whether he can really coach, but he definitely made progress last year. I think they finished 12-13. So if they can get to 500 this year, it's an enormous win for the league and for the franchise. I don't know.
That would be huge.
I think it's possible. I think the talent for it's possible, but it's hard to bet on it. It's just, what do we always say? Bad teams find a way to fuck things up. They just always do. The Kings, they always find a way to fuck things up.
You're right. And that would be huge if they got the 500. And again, your point about Carl Anthony Towns, maybe he won't request a trade right now, but you can't imagine someone, to your point, an Anthony Davis level talent, someone as good as Carl Towns is going to be happy playing out the rest of his career on a team that wins 20-30 games every year. Like, no, at some point he's going to be like, I'm out of here. Like, this place is terrible. Right. Speaking of more terrible situations, the latest on Ben Simmons. So it was announced that he, in fact, made it clear he will not be reporting to training camp. And he made it clear that he intends to never play another game for the 76ers franchise.
Hold on, Gerard, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
On this, I saw that tweet and Judy just posted the tweet from Woj. What was news about that tweet? How was that different than what was reported the week before by Keith Pompey?
Nothing new about that. The only thing new was that it, as training camp is here, there he's firmly entrenching, like, because it was still wondering, am I going to report? We don't know. But Keith did say he was very clear he wasn't going to report right. to camp.
But my point is, this is separate from Ben Simmons. Why? I don't think Keith was mentioned in that tweet. I think Keith broke the news that Ben Simmons met with the particulars of the mm-hmm. Sixers, owner, GM, coach, and to their faces said, I'm not coming back to Philadelphia. And so now ESPN runs this tweet and an article that accompanies it as if to say they're breaking the story.
Right.
Never referencing the fact that we read this a week ago.
Correct. And that goes back to what we talked about last week about journalism and platforms. So ESPN is a large platform. Woj has his Woj bombs, and everyone knows who that is. Keith Pompey, longtime 76ers beat writer on the for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Yeah, Keith already told us this a week ago, but Keith doesn't have the reach that Woj and ESPN does, right? So
but don't that's you have why to link to it? Don't you have to say as reported by Keith Pompey 7 days ago?
I mean, you should. You really should do that.
I called Henry. I'm like, what am I missing here? Yes, he ain't coming. I know the Sixers are holding out hope that he will. This article, it suggests, just like Keith did, that it ain't going to happen. My people inside Philadelphia are saying, well, it's going to be a while because we are not moving him for less value than what he's worth, and we're going to play the waiting game. Negotiation can be what it is, right? We have no idea which side will cave.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing. It's a high-stakes game of chicken, right? And who is going to, you know, slam on the brakes or blink first? Clearly, Ben's got a lot of cash. So I don't think he's going to be worried about – I don't think they're going to fine him per se. What they're going to start doing is withholding, right? Because if you don't show up to play, you're not getting your game checks. So he's not going to
– But you know what his contract – what he's already got paid, right?
Yeah.
He's already got $8 million for next year, and he gets another $8 million potentially October 1. This is what I'm going to ask you. They haven't any games as of October 1. He's owed $8 million October 1. What do the Sixers do about that?
Now, the thing is about that with the CBA, can they withhold that $8 million for October 1?
Hasn't reported yet.
Right. I don't know if they can do that. Yes, the game checks, for sure, they can withhold that. The $8 million that's already owed, I don't know if the CBA will allow them to withhold that money.
Well, they can definitely not wire the money into his account, sure. The $8 million, and then fight. That ain't going to make him come back, though.
No. That's the thing. He's going to dig his heels in more. Well, now you want to pay me? Like, forget you guys. Like, ultimately, it's going to be what we always talk about. Who can stomach and handle the bad PR? And Henry says this all the time, and I agree. Owners don't like bad press and looking like fools in the media. When eventually the stories start turning and we're like, man, what the hell is Josh Harris doing? Daryl doesn't care, right? Daryl will take all the arrows, whatever. But if Josh doesn't want to take any more arrows and he's like, look, Daryl, fix this now. We got to move on. Not only that, as good as Joel Embiid is, which he's excellent, right? We'll get to our top players in the league a little bit later.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, and Seth Curry ain't enough to get you to where you were last year, which was the number one seed in the East. So at some point, you're going to be like, look, man, we want to go back to where we were. We got to do something now and figure this out. So I think it'll be Philadelphia who ultimately ends on moving first.
Yeah, I agree with you, but on Daryl's side, he is going to be thinking – well, there's a whole bunch of other really good teams too. And so some of these teams that are just falling just short like we are right now without Ben, they're going to want to do a deal to get Ben. And what we get back in return, we'll see. I think, and this is not something I've talked to Daryl about, he would never tell me anyway, he wants Beal or Dame.
Of course.
It doesn't mean he wouldn't take some other deals, because I, and we wrote about this a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I forget. There's seven deals, eight deals out there I think could be pretty good, nine deals. But those are the two gems that you want to put with Embiid, because it's perimeter player matched with post player. It's an easy fit in both cases. Beal, obviously, if you have Beal, you better make sure Maxey can handle the point, but you can find other point guards out there with smaller trades. They've got some depth. They can, you know, they wanted to trade Matisse. They could probably get a point guard for Matisse, Tybuil.
Well, did I lose Coach or did you guys lose me?
I hear you. Hello? Can you guys hear me at all?
You're on. I think Gerard just froze. I'm going to kick him out.
Good. Okay, so I can talk. So the challenge that the Sixers have is, how long can we wait, right? So if they feel like, all right, we're treading water at 500 or a little bit above 500, then they can wait on Ben, whether they pay him or not, it's a different story. And you know, they're trying to develop Tyrese Maxey, who I think can be a Kyle Lowry type impact player. They're going to have to throw him into the fire and see how he develops and see what he does. And if that's working, well, then Ben Simmons really loses leverage and the Sixers gain leverage, because now they're thinking, all right, we're hanging in there as a top, even top six playoff team, and we're developing our point guard of the future. So now we don't have to necessarily replace Ben with a point guard. We can just bring in an all-star level player. Obviously getting Dame, getting Bradley Beal. I don't think it's the Sixers that won't do that. I don't know why the Wizards haven't done that yet. It could be because Bradley Beal doesn't want to be playing with Joel Embiid. And if we don't get Gerard back, I have some thoughts on that whole process. We know Dame has already said publicly, because of Henry fleshed him out a little bit, that he wants to give Portland one more chance. But anyone that looks at that roster, and I'm not the only person saying this, everyone is saying this outside Portland, I think the team improved slightly. I like adding Larry Nance. It brings, I think he brings hardcore defense to a team that's desperate for it. I think hiring Chauncey Billups also addresses the defense. They'll be better at it, but it's not going to be a contender in the West. And so at some point, I think Daryl's hoping that Dame pulls that nuclear button or press the nuclear button with his agent Aaron Goodwin and said, all right, it ain't working, guys. I love you, Portland, but let me go ahead and get on to Philly, pair up with Embiid. The Blazers get an all-star in Ben Simmons. They're going to be a good team. They won't be as good. Damian's better than Ben. He has more impact than Ben. But they'll be good. It's a win-win for both. It hasn't happened yet, both in Washington or in Portland. But I think that's what Daryl wants, Gerard, is just, I'm just going to wait. If Ben wants to come back, great. You know, they're all saying it. But inside the Sixers organization, they know he ain't coming back. And Daryl's not going to get leveraged anytime soon. They know
it's a done deal.
Yeah. They have to hope Maxey's good. If as I was saying when you were gone, if Maxey's a good player, then it just makes life much, much easier for the Sixers. A good player right away. But it's hard to be good, as a 19, 20-year-old in this league. It's so rare. You can put up decent numbers, but you're not going to necessarily flip the switch to help teams win. That's what I think the average fan doesn't get, is you look great on SportsCenter highlights. The numbers are interesting in terms of the raw data, points, rebounds, assists, steals, dunks, threes. Impacting winning is a very different level, and we just don't see many young players do it. So Greg is asking about a game of musical chairs. Am I predicting Dame sits first? I'm not predicting that. And it's a perfect segue, Greg, is when up Gerard, I'll opine on this too. I don't think Bradley Beal is long for the Wizards. I think that Tommy Shepard and Bradley Beal and his agent, who I think is Mark Borlstein, a very well-respected, top three, top four agent in terms of billion-dollar deals and whatever that he's done, they've managed it perfectly, perfectly. Everyone thinks Bradley Beal is just fine staying in Washington. That's the perception all of us get. That is not what I hear from my people inside. Beal wants out. And I think the Wizards want him out just because they know it's a ticking time bomb. That team also isn't going to compete for a championship this year or next year, or even probably the year after. I say probably because they can always do deals. And I don't just consider Tommy Shepherd their president or friend. He's really good at what he's done. I'm very impressed with what he's done with Washington. But Beal finished second in scoring last year, the scoring title in the NBA behind Steph Curry, like by a bucket or two. This is one of the top scorers on the planet. In his prime at 28, I believe, he isn't just going to let them figure it out and be in Damian's position again. They're not even, the Wizards aren't even where Portland was these last couple of years, where they did make one conference championship with Dame and CJ. They're a level or two below that. They're just hoping to be not in a play-in game this year, but at best, they probably are going to have to play into the final eight. I don't see them as a likely top six, top 17. And so, and Beal knows that. He looks at the roster. They added Spencer Dinwiddie, who's good. I think that's a very good sign for them. He's a good player. He can play at point or off the ball with his size defensively. Very, very, very bright young man. I've met Spencer and was very impressed with his just pure intelligence, and he's a good player. It's not enough. There are a lot of young guys there. So I think that inside the Beltway, Bradley Beal is going to putting pressure on Tommy Shepherd. Find me where I want to be. Here's where I want to be. I even wrote about this too. There's maybe three locations that I found that could likely do a deal. There's other franchises that I didn't mention, like Miami, like Atlanta, that with Bradley Beal would be serious contenders for championships. I didn't necessarily see a fair trade coming back for the Wizards without it getting to be 3, 4, or 5 teams, which it might have to be because Beal's making so much money that I don't think anyone wants to read about a 5-team trade that I put together with 24 players. But that might be what it has to be to get Beal out and get Washington what they want. Again, because Bradley Beal has played ball in a way that Ben Simmons is not right now, the Wizards don't have the external pressure of having to do a deal tomorrow. But I think internally they know it's a time bomb where at some point Beal's going to have to go public like Anthony Davis did, like Ben Simmons did, like James Harden did. And now you're just right away lose leverage. So I do think that Damian may come out first and say, okay, this is enough's enough. But that's just public. I think privately the Wizards very well could do the same thing. And I think Daryl's waiting for either to happen. I think he'd love to take, I mean, Beal or Lillard is a big win for Washington. And as I wrote in this article, there's other deals too. But I wrote something this week regarding Ben Simmons. What we're forgetting about is there's a human tragedy in this. That tragedy is probably a strong word, but Ben Simmons is 25 years old now. He played all last season at 24. What's going to happen to him? Like, this isn't just flotsam, you know, in the ocean. This is a young man who's made 3 All-Star games. He's the former number one pick in the draft. Runner up to Defensive Player of the Year, 1/3 team all league champion, winner, has more wins than Jordan had at this age in the postseason by a lot. It's not like he stinks, because he had a bad series against Atlanta and has had some fourth quarter meltdowns. I hope, and it's what I wrote about this, I hope that wherever he goes next, they recognize that there's a human being here that is really hurting. What's happened to Ben Simmons is at the very least unfair. I would argue it's almost sadistic. The way he's being dragged through the mud because of some bad games, as if other players haven't had bad games, even on bigger stages. Magic Johnson is my favorite player of all time, back when I had favorite players. And he had one summer where they called him Tragic Johnson, because he drove it out the clock in a game that he did basically a J.R. Smith, Gerard. He did a
J.R. Smith.
Yeah, I do too, because I was a gigantic Laker fan watching this. I think it was in college. And I was in a lot of pain. Maybe, I don't remember what year it was now. You'd think I'd remember. I don't think I was in college just yet. And it hurt so bad. Tragic Johnson, broke my heart.
Yeah, no, that was rough. Look, I think Ben is undervalued right now, right? Like, and it's just because it's a, what have you done for me lately thing. And everyone just, the last thing to remember is him not wanting to shoot a layup or do a dunk with like a second left, him being afraid to go to the free throw line in the fourth quarter in the playoffs. Like, I get it. Like, this is what everybody sees, but which what I've said, what you wrote about, Coach, this is a 25-year-old all NBA and all NBA defensive player. Like, those players don't grow on trees. You can't just find them. Oh yeah, I'll grab another one next week. Like, no, that's not a thing. Like, he's extremely talented. He needs to go to a place where we, as Henry said, we don't make the shooting the big thing, right? That's it. It's not about that. Here are these other things that matter. Here's what we're going to want to do. And as you always talk about, Coach, wrap their arms around him, give him, show him some love, that Ted Lasso style. That's what he needs. And this goes back to the Minnesota stuff we talked about, right?
Yeah.
That would not be a good franchise for him because they're terrible, right? Like, they need he needs to go to a place that knows what they're doing and knows how to actually, again, what's the culture like? What's Ben, we love you here. We think you're great. Here's what we need you to do, right? And again, build that trust. That's the big thing I didn't talk about with Minnesota, Coach. There's no trust there in the organization, right? That's why you have what you have. So if he can go somewhere where he's like, wow, I trust that this place has faith in me, I have faith in them, they're going to do the right thing. It's amazing what you see will work if that happens. Now, you know, unfortunately in the NBA, most franchises just ain't like that, right? It's just kind of, you know. So we'll see what happens with him. I, to your point, you're correct. Washington, because Bradley's playing ball, they can wait this out, right? Because it is what it is. You know, look, with Bradley and with those young guys, you never know. They could be halfway decent this year.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I think they're pretty good. Right, right. That, and every game, every win they get makes it even easier to just say, Brad, hey, we're going to get you what you want. Keep playing great. Let's try to be a first-team All-NBA player. Let's be the best shooting guard in the world. And let me do what I do and get you where you want to be, wherever, you know, wherever that is. Clearly, he wants to go to a contender, it's fair to say.
Let's talk about something happening in the NBA as it relates to vaccines. And we know that in San Francisco and in New York, there are very strict regulations in terms of what you can do indoors, and you must be vaccinated, right? Like, so basically for the NBA, if you're unvaccinated, essentially you won't be able to play in home games in if you are a team that is in New York or in San Francisco. So obviously that is the Knicks, Nets, Warriors. Why does this matter? Well, because we learned from Yaron Weitzman, our friend over at Fox, that Andrew Wiggins is one such player who is not vaccinated. And even after multiple attempts to get doctors to him, remember, Coach, we talked about group settings not being the place to educate these guys. Got to send them one-on-one. One-on-one didn't work with him either, right? You had a doctor talking about the carnage she saw, what it means, doesn't want to move his stance off not getting vaccinated. And according to Yaron, his league sources also say Kyrie Irving is not vaccinated. Now, why does this matter, of course? I mean, Andrew Wiggins less so. I mean, of course, he's like known, but Kyrie is like one of those dudes, right? A very well-known popular player. And this is also timed with a sort of cryptic tweet that Kyrie sent out earlier this week about, you know, take your mask off and all this sort of thing. And, you know, and obviously everybody tried to interpret what it meant. And, you know, one of the things that I know just from covering Kyrie from afar in his years in the league and up close in Brooklyn these last 2 years, don't ever try to figure out what Kyrie means when he puts something online. Just don't. It's a fool's errand and you're not going to know. All right. Like, he could be part trolling you. He could actually mean what he, who knows? What we do know is Sean Marks and Steve Nash had their press availability on Wednesday, and I was there. And, you know, it was asked to them, you know, if training camp were to start today, would everybody be available? And of course, it was a roundabout way of asking, is everybody vaccinated? And Mark said, you know, if we were to start today, there would be players missing. I'm not going to get into who and why, whatever, but everyone wouldn't be available. But I have no doubt that come first day of the regular season, we will be able to full field our full team. So what I'm assuming there is that means that, you know, Kyrie's going to get vaccinated. Because Marks talked about, the whole team talked about it, and they know what's at stake. And for them, it's a championship, right? That's very clear. That's why this team is together. That's why they're all here. They know they want to win it. And Kyrie wants to be a part of that and win. And if you want to be there, well, you got to be around for home games, my guy. So you got to get vaccinated and show up. So it'll be interesting to see as time flies and as we get closer to this stuff, who is vaccinated. Because the league is at 80%, I think, last numbers I checked. And with about 600 guys heading into camp, someone did the math I saw online, and I don't know if this is correct, roughly about two players per team, right, is about what they're thinking of as are on X. Obviously, some teams are 100%. A few teams are. I want to say the Grizzlies are. Might be another team or two that's 100% vaxxed. So, and then there are obviously teams with less. And Rob Pelinka, as an FYI Lakers, he says that the team will be at 100% vaccination come beginning of the season, which would include LeBron James. Yes. Wow. And we're saying that because let's let the cat out of the bag, right? These LeBron, Kyrie, these are the players who we've been hinting around for the last couple of weeks. Like, we're not 100% sure they're vaxxed, right? And but with Pelinka saying what he said and with Sean Marks saying what he said, the assumption is these guys are going to get back. And we'll see in a couple weeks here, middle of October, we'll see come these games, these guys are playing. We'll know for sure if they are or not.
As someone who does talk to players and not just at the NBA level, and some of them are vaccine hesitant, and as someone who very much believes in the science we've done, I think there's been a billion vaccines administered globally. We have overwhelming data. As of now, you know, there are some anti-vaxxers who fairly say, well, what about in 20 years? We have no evidence for 20 years for this, but there's no science that shows you should be worried about this vaccine going forward. That being said, Gerard, I stand behind people having the privilege of doing what instinctively they know to be right. But there's consequences for your actions. You can do that. However, we can find compromises. For example, as I say to anyone, whether they're players or not, if you don't want to be vaccinated, but you want to be around all of us or people who you want to see that are, make sure you wear a mask indoors unless you're testing that time that you're seeing them. If you do a rapid test, this is from Dr. Michael Mina 17 months ago, If you were tested negative this morning, fine, come hang out with us. I'll be fine with that. If the NBA had a codicil, which they can't even do because it's the state rule, as I understand, state law, as I understand it, the state should allow, if you want to be in an indoor building that can be tracked, because you can't just do it at a restaurant. But if this is an organization, you can verify that you wore a mask in the locker room, everywhere else. The only place you're not wearing a mask is on the court, but you also have a negative test. We did a whole bubble with it, not even a full year ago. So I think that should be fine. That being said, there's no question in my mind, these guys, as fit as they are, I have a friend that was much older, he's 56. He's still fighting for his life. He didn't get vaccinated and he is never gonna recover fully. And it's horrible and sad for he and his family knowing that he'll never be able to do a lot of things that he was always doing. He's got kids. It's nothing. They're not getting vaccinated. But I want to see how the NBA handles all of this going forward.
I agree. And the part for me, Coach, that like makes it such an issue is the stature these players have. And when they do and don't do things, what that means to other people. Like, I am not someone who, and I learned this lesson very early in life, probably as a fan of the 86 Mets, right? I am not someone who follows or ever did much follow athletes' word as the gospel. Whatever they do, I'm going to do. And like, you know, these are role models and people that you should look up to. But there are people out there, Coach, who these people, what they do is the gospel. And they're like, yeah, I'm 100% in. If I don't know if you're familiar with the Nicki Minaj situation that happened earlier this week and last week, right? People out here literally going, yeah, she's 100% right. And it's like, oh my God. And this idea again of you stating you're not taking the vaccine because I've done my research. I don't think, oh, no, but you haven't done any research. Like, stop. A, don't use that word because you don't know what research means, right? You took anecdotal evidence from your friends or your cousin's friend in Nicki Minaj's case, right? Which is not research, right? And you've decided this is what makes sense. Like, that's terrible. There are people who are going to literally follow you blindly. And the difference being when you are someone of that stature, Nicki Minaj, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, if something happens to you, you have all the money in the world to get the best care immediately. You figure out, right? And life will probably go on for you, probably, because you at least, or in the worst case scenario, you have the resources to actually fight if something happens negatively and adversely for you with COVID. Most of the people that follow you don't have that luxury. If they catch it, it's a wrap, right? Like, it's over. So, you know, I just, So that's why it's important to me that, you know, these guys really recognize, look, it's the gift and the curse. This is the platform you have. There's a responsibility that comes with that. And it's responsible on you to put the right messaging out there about being responsible and doing the right thing.
Yeah, the one thing when I work with young players, I don't do it so much anymore. When I did, the one thing I always really try to stress is you've got pride is taking you a long way. Confidence is taking you a long way. But adults just don't rely on that as much. Fully formed adults. We have way too much. We have too many adults in America who live on that idea of pride and arrogance. And that's why we have politicians. Sometimes we have get elected. Absurdly, because we have a lot of ignorant people out there who they can't admit to being wrong. I don't like that for my athletes. I want my athletes to be able to pivot quickly to smarter practices, smarter processes. And to be honest, I think I've told the story once before. I had a player call me once when I think it was Collins, one of the Collins twins came out to being gay. And a player called me and said, how should I feel about this? And I was just so proud that he asked me. That is not something that he was a player I'm very close with, but I said, you know, well, how do you feel? And he's like, what do I care? I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. If he had said something different, I would have tried to walk him through why it shouldn't really matter to him. But he already felt that way. He just wasn't sure if he could say it publicly. What does it mean? He's from a pretty conservative state. He was concerned about that. But just the idea that he was willing to talk to some older man about getting some guidance, to me, was the win. And that's where I feel like many of us, when we've talked to people like Dr. Mina and Dr. Sen, all these doctors, the law and everyone we've talked to this time, we're not experts in this. Well, the basketball players are expert at basketball and maybe marketing and some other things too, who've built their celebrity status so well. They're not experts in this. I enjoy reading some of the virus and vaccine articles in places like the New Yorker and the New York Times to remind me of just how incredibly ignorant I am. I like knowing that I know nothing about these things. I'm looking for people that I can trust. Going back to what you said regarding the Wolves and everything, it's the same thing in all of this. I understand why there's a lack of trust, but we've got 1 billion doses in now. And yeah, but to further the point, Judy, I think I have it in there too. I don't know that fans can come watch them play in some of these places without being vaccinated, right?
Correct.
That's a new thing. Yeah. We've never seen that before, have we?
We have not. They are now making it. Yeah, it's going to be a situation where you've got to be vaccinated. I know for Brooklyn, for media things, so there, I mentioned Sean and Steve had their media availability on Wednesday. If you were going to come in person to talk to them, you had to be vaccinated, media members at the training facility. Obviously, I was, so I went. For Monday's media day, which is at Barclay with all the players and everything else, same thing. If you're coming in person as a media member, got to be vaccinated or else you're not allowed.
So you show them your card. Is that what you do? You show them your
vaccine. Yes, you send them your card, or you bring the Excelsior pass, on your phone, and you bring it in. But yeah, for us, because it's media, we already have it sent into them, so they know. So they're like, all right, these guys are vaxxed, we're good to go. Yeah, it's look, we're already past the stage of eliminating COVID, right? Enough epidemiologists and doctors have said that this is something we're gonna have to live with. What we don't want to live with is consistent Delta variants and crazy things happening every few months that continue to keep us in this prolonged state, right? The more vaccinations we have, like more people doing the right thing, the better we all are. All right, COVID fatigue, enough of that.
Yes.
Real quick on the NBPA,
yes.
Executive Director Michelle Roberts, which was known, stepping down at the end of this year after quite a run as the head of the Players Association. She'll be replaced by Tamika Tremaglio, who runs Deloitte's tax practice in DC, if I have that correct. I know she works for Deloitte, but she'll be moving over into this role, succeeding Michelle Roberts, who has just done wonderful things for the organization. And new NBPA president, CJ McCollum, obviously who took over for Chris Paul, will be shepherding us through this next wave. And I think continue to build on what they did with Michelle Roberts, which is players recognizing that they have control. And Tyler saying they felt like huge news. I mean, it is huge news, but it isn't, Tyler. It's huge in the sense that this was Michelle was always going to retire at the end of this year. I mean, when I did a profile on her, God, 2 years ago, she was like, I'm not going to be doing this job till I die. Like, no, we got an exit strategy. Like, and then COVID pushed it a year longer. But she was always like, I got about a year left and then I'm stepping down. I mean, she had a long story career is a huge partner at Skadden Arps, and you know, she's ready to, like, you know, be a retired woman and do her thing, you know, and not have to worry about negotiations and protracted dealings with the media and all that, right? So kudos to Michelle on a great tenure, and I'm very excited to get to know Tamika and how she and CJ plan to lead the MBPA moving forward. Because I think, look, age of empowerment, all things you want to say, as with everything, there comes like a sort of a backlash or a reckoning, right? Obama, 8 years, then Donald Trump came, right? Like, that was almost, you could see that coming. All of the player empowerment era, right? What's going to happen now in this next wave with the upcoming TV rights negotiation deal, right? That's going to be a very interesting thing to play out. So it'll be interesting to see how that all develops. And Tamika isn't coming into this as a noob. She's been involved in a lot of their negotiations as side counsel. So this isn't going to be brand new hat for her. Like, she has no idea what she's doing. So we'll be paying attention to that.
Gerard, have you seen early reports on what they think the next salary cap might be when we get the new TV deal in 24-25, I think?
Well, the thing about that is that I'm seeing different reports on what the TV deal is going to be, right? I'm seeing like something as high as $25 billion. I'm like, $25 billion? I was like, I mean, I guess Henry always talks about streaming services, right? Yep. Well, if Amazon or Apple. Netflix or whoever Apple. Apple decides they're going to fork over that, sure. But because right now the current TV deal is a $7 billion deal. 7 to 25, that's a big jump, right? So we'll see. But it's going to be, I think it's very clear, streaming is going to be where that's going to come from. That's going to be the entity that pays all that money.
I read one article this week that guesstimated the cap would be $175 million a team, which is a big, I think it's in the 130s now. Big jump. It's a big deal now. This, how they collectively bargain this next agreement is big, because there's a whole bunch of money at stake more than ever before.
Without question. All right, let's move on to, you want to talk about John Wall really quick, coach?
Or quickly, I just want to ask you. So John Wall is being asked to stay home. I think we've talked about it before a little bit. Is there any market for him, do you see? Or is it a matter of when do they finally decide to buy him out? And then, this is the bigger point to me, then who can get him? Because John Wall, as your backup point guard, for example, that's pretty damn valuable, especially at a good price, because he's already getting paid from the buyout.
I think you hit the nail on the head right there. The market, I believe, for John Wall is as a backup somewhere. The question is, does John Wall think he's a backup point guard? That is the question. I don't know that he thinks he is. Maybe he does.
But, Gerard, he might be able to get starter level money, not what he's getting now, 40 plus million the next couple of years, 10, 12, 14 million as a starter for a non-contender. If he wants to go to a contender, it's going to have to be, they're going to already have a point guard in place, probably. But he can do that. He can do that. I mean, the question is, how long do you want to sit at home, John? You've already sat for a long number of years due to injuries. You're not getting better as a player sitting for year after year after year. Is this how you want to go out? Because the Rockets can find a way to save money. I don't know what the limit is on what they can buy him out at, but because he's not going to, his contract has a player option for next year. He's not going to opt out at $44 million.
Absolutely not.
They're on the hook for close to $90 million. What can they pay him where he'll say, okay, and then go make whatever deal he is with the Lakers, the Clippers, whatever, you know?
Yeah, I think for John at this point, you're right, coach. He's not going to opt out. He's going to want to take all that money. And then at this stage of his career, I mean, he's not old, but the injuries have, you know, definitely taken some of that athleticism away, because he just want to win now, be on a winner. And if he wants to be on a winner, to your point, it's going to be in a backup role. And where does he go, right? Does he go to Kemba, DeRozan, Wall, three-headed monster? Does he go to the Knicks? Does he go to the Lakers? Does he go to the Clippers, right? The Clippers actually probably, that could work potentially, right? Like, where does he go to say, okay, I'm going to go here, and my thing is about winning because I got plenty of cash in the bank. We'll see.
All right. You want to get to top 100 and our own top three per position.
So SI did their top 100, and ESPN, of course, did the same, top 100 players in the NBA. And, of course, you know what these lists are. It's just a way to get the internet and NBA Twitter angry, everybody yelling, oh, this guy's too low, this guy's too high, all those things, you know. I mean, the first thing I want to ask, Coach, is on the SI list, did you see anything that looked egregious to you?
Well, the problem I have with these lists is, how are we defining it? Are we defining it as to who is the most, who is the best player in any one game? Or are we saying who would be the most valuable person to have in on your team right now, day one, for the entirety of a season or longer, given that they are the age they are, right? If age didn't matter, LeBron James is LeBron James, but it does matter. So I would not be picking Kevin Durant as number one overall, I guess I did, if it was from game one to the last game of the year, who is likely to put the best numbers together in all the metrics he used. Considering Jokic destroyed the league last year, he was number five on the list. That was surprising to me, Gerard.
Six.
He was six. Luka was five, I think, yeah.
Okay, if we were picking to win one game against the Aliens, I think you and I both picked Durant. And what do you think twice? We go have a beer. We have Durant, we're good.
Exactly.
But we play 82 games. And there's lots of things that go on with that. And he's much older than Jokic. So, by the way, I probably would still pick Giannis, to be honest with you. I thought Giannis coasted last year, as he should have. And it worked out just fine for him. He found a gear late in the postseason that we have never seen before in human history. And I think had he killed the league the way he did the previous 2 years when he won his MVPs, I don't know that he would have found that juice. Harden's always lost juice at the end of the season. A lot of players do. We've seen LeBron not have juice late. No one has done what Giannis started doing. And remember, he had the freak knee injury that we thought might put him out for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So
I didn't think he'd play again after that. Right. I was like, what?
I think coasting a little bit helped. But yeah, I would have ranked Giannis one and Jokic two and maybe KD three. I mean, he's obviously up there. But I don't know that I'd put him top five just because he coasts a lot. Understandably so. If you're looking to win a playoff series, I'd pick KD one.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately is what we're talking about, right? I always say when people do, who's the best, who's this, who's that? I'm like, to your point, what are we arguing? Are you arguing who is the best basketball player, or are you arguing who has the best career resume, right? Those are different conversations to have, right? And I think to your point, Coach, I'm just saying, again, Aliens, or we're at the gym or the playground and we're choosing fives, it's KD all day. If I got first, yep, that dude, let's go. Like, that's just an easy...
Right, for any one game.
Yeah. I didn't have any issues.
Even a series.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, even for a playoff run, because we've seen him do it. So I'm taking that guy.
Yeah.
I
might argue with you on the whole postseason. It's not, I wouldn't argue vociferously because KD is my guy too. I love KD as much as you do, Drew. I really do. Always have. But remember, when KD was in college, he played 1 year. And had maybe the best freshman season since the 70s. Probably did, actually. I think it was ESPN, and I thought he should go number one. I thought he's George Gervin.
As did I.
Yeah, I thought he was George Gervin with defense. Like, this guy is the most incredible thing. But now that Giannis has found another level and the Bucks adjusted to the best way to play with Giannis, I think it's an argument. Whereas maybe years before, it wasn't even an argument. At the beginning of the postseason last year, I wouldn't have made this argument. Giannis was shooting a lot of jump shots. But the Giannis we saw who channeled Shaq into that body, I think you can make the argument that he's right there. I mean, he was every bit the LeBron that we saw in some of these postseasons, who's deserving of wherever you want to put him. LeBron is truly... as gifted as a player we've ever seen in the postseason, like Jordan. KD is there. Giannis, after what we saw last year, I would put him in the same boat.
And that's, you know, when we're talking about these great guys and these, like, top fives or whatever, we're splitting hairs. And sometimes it ultimately comes down to preference, right? Like, when it's that close, you're like, all right, I prefer this, you prefer that, let's move on. But anyway, with the list, I didn't think anybody was omitted or anybody was in a wrong tier of people. I think it just is what it is. But you and I said, all right, let's figure out who we think are the 15 best players coming into the season, but by position. So the top three is centers, forwards who don't really guard smalls, forwards who don't really guard bigs, secondary ball handlers. And I mean, it's convoluted category, but who cares? Yeah. All right, centers, you go first, coach. Who are your top three? I think we're going to have the exact same top three here.
Oh, I know we will. Jokic, Rudy, and Embiid. That's the easiest position.
Easy. It's the easiest position. All right.
No one's there. As good as Conley Towns, he's not there. Go ahead.
Yes, he's not with those guys.
So what's next?
So now forwards who don't really guard smalls.
Okay, so that's really like a small forward, right? So that's where I have KD, by the way.
Okay.
You may have my power forward. I had.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
It's all right. I needed to move him so I could have someone else in there. I've got KD, Kawhi, and Paul George. Paul George was my last pick.
Interesting. This is hilarious. So it's funny. I think this is where we slotted them. I had AD. And AD, Giannis, and Bron. Those are my three forwards.
That's my other forward spot.
AD, Giannis, and Bron in that spot.
Oh, maybe. I think you're exactly right. I don't have the labels on them. Bron, Giannis, and AD. All right, so we're 6 for 6. Yeah. All right, we're so what about the other forward spot?
Okay, this is tough. See, and it's for this third one, because I'm not sure where to put him. KD, obviously, PG. Is Luka a guard or a forward?
I have Luka as a point guard, basically. Yeah.
Okay. But so I have KD, PG, and Luka in that other those other forward slots.
So okay. All right. So we're straight on through because I have Luka. So my point guards are primary ball handling scorers, Curry, Dame, and Luka.
Okay. And for me, my primary ball handlers are Curry, James, and Dame.
And I've got James in the other spot with the
handler, yep.
I have Harden, Beal, and Holiday as an off-ball player. I figured it'd be one spot. Who do you have? So I bet we have 14 and 15 the same.
Yes, we do.
I have Drew in that 15 spot. Who do you have?
Well, so I have Bradley Beal. So we are there. So 14 for 14, we're the same. It's 15 and 16 where we have differences. I have Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving.
He didn't make, yeah. So Kyrie would have been my fourth guy at point with Curry, Dame, and Luka. I looked at Jimmy Butler, but I picked PG and said, it's really close.
I was surprised.
It was a good exercise to do. Jimmy Butler really had a phenomenal season last year.
Jimmy's, of course,
issue is not shooting enough threes. Right.
Exactly.
I picked PG. Yeah, but he's excellent. I mean, really. These, to me, the guys we mentioned, these are roughly the 15 best players in the league, right? In some kind of order, however you want to figure it out. Let's put it like this. You ain't winning a championship if you don't have one of these dudes on your team. Right? It's just not happening. Like you got, and most likely you have to have two or three of them in order to win. But that's kind of where we're leaning with that. I thought it was an interesting exercise. What will happen now, though, Coach, as time goes on, and, you know, LeBron and KD and those guys and Steph and start aging out, and it's Trae Young,
Zion,
and Luka, and Ja Morant, and hopefully our guy Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, you know, the next wave coming up behind. That's what's going to be.
We might do that. We might do that next week. Is let's pick five guys that can bubble up at this time next year. Who are five guys that might bubble into that? Not that any of these guys are necessarily going to drop. I don't. LeBron was an MVP level player until he got hurt. If he does get hurt this year and has another MVP level season. I mean, who's dropping from this list?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, injury is the only thing that's going to keep people out of here, right? Like, that's the only thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think that Rudy Gobert is the most underrated player on this list because he's just the worst offensive player on the list by far. Right? But if it's basketball is jazz, it's not just trumpet playing. It's 5-on-5. His impact in 5-on-5. As a rim runner, pick and roll player, a defensive monster, is enormously impactful. He was number two in dunks and threes EPM behind Jokic, and no one was close to those two. Jokic was by far the best, and then it was Rudy, and then everyone else. He's the most underrated, I think. And then I would say in my list, Drew, and we saw in the postseason, the little things, Drew, he's the best smaller defender in the world. Giannis, PG, not anymore, Jimmy Butler, the big centers are great. Drew, below that, in terms of height, he's the best out there. And that's really valuable.
He's excellent.
Yeah. Listen, the NBA season is coming up. We're excited. Training camps next week. As I said, I'm going to media day on Monday in Brooklyn to see what the guys got to say. I'm in the best shape of my life, all that jazz. Yeah. I'm gonna pop in on like some other teams, Denver, Memphis, and see what they have to say. All right. As Judy says, she is vaccinated going past 12, as are we. Everyone, stay safe. Have a great weekend. We will see you on Monday. Peace.